Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. My Paradigm Shifter tonight is a very, very exciting influence in the collective. She's bringing us into kind of an expanded perspective and a kind of a peaceful, loving, almost a spiritual perspective because of her work with abductees, in quotes, and taking people into expressing their experience with what we have been calling aliens, although I realize that isn't exactly polite. So, Mary Rodwell, welcome to the show.
Good morning, but good evening to your listeners. It's a pleasure to be speaking to you, Veronica.
Oh, I'm very excited about your work, and I want to mention that you are the principal of the Australian Close Encounter Resource Network called ACERN, right?
That's correct. I started ACERN in 1997.
Well, I want to know how on earth you got started with this subject. I know you're a nurse, but you're also a hypnotherapist, right?
Yeah, nurse midwife was how I started off in my professional life, and I sometimes make the joke that if you'd told me then when I was delivering babies that one day I'd be traveling the world talking about aliens and writing books about them, I would probably have sent you to the nearest psychiatrist.
So, you're a 2012 midwife by the sounds of things.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is that I've been in counseling for the last 20 to 30 years and a hypnotherapist a good 15 of those. So, yes, this is where I'm at the moment, but my counseling, of course, goes into, you know, what I call anomalous experiences. That's any experience that's outside what traditionally is considered the norm.
Ah, well, I was kind of curious, like, what would trigger you into that? What happened to, did you have experiences yourself with ETs or beings of other galactic doodah? Other galactic persuasion, would we say it that way?
Oh, look, Veronica, if I have, they've been not conscious as such.
Okay.
I mean, a gentleman coming to me all probably about 18, 19 years ago now that said, I've heard you're open-minded, which is the reason he'd come to me. And he said, look, there's no support groups for this. For this, people only consider that you're a loony. And proceeded to tell me about his whole family being involved with going through wars, being taken on spacecraft, waking up with marks on his body and their body. He'd have shaved areas on his leg. And he said, look, we're terrified, but more importantly, too, the relatives won't even come to the house because they think it's demons. Hmm. And so that was the scenario that really catapulted me into this particular whole area, although...
Is that what made you study hypnotherapy, or were you already a hypnotherapist?
Yes, well, I was already doing things like past lives and what have you, so I'd explored that area, but I'd been fortunate to read synchronistically, which, you know, whichever way you want to look at that, two books which helped me with understanding what was going on. One was the one by Dr. John Max, a Harvard psychiatrist, who actually studied the whole alien abduction phenomena and wrote the book Abduction and then Passport to the Cosmos.
Okay.
Now, he really resonated with me because here is a professor of psychiatry at Harvard. You can't get more credible than that.
That's
and
right.
Also, I read Whitley Strieber's books, Communion. So I knew that there seemed to be some tangibility to this whole experience. And I did advanced counseling at the time and took this case actually to the advanced counseling supervision. And what was fascinating to me, rather than tell me that they thought the gentleman was crazy, they basically started to tell me about their own strange experiences.
Oh, wonderful.
Which seemed to open the door to people saying, well, actually, I sometimes have things I can't explain. And that really fascinated me, that was how ultimately they looked at it. But from that started me off on, okay, so if this is a reality, because it must be, because, you know, it's more than one person. This guy, you know, was plainly very intelligent, articulate. He, as far as I was concerned, there was no evidence of any mental illness. The whole family were experiencing it, even the children. This can't be an hallucination. This can't be a fantasy. There are tangible marks. This must be real, but I need to now be informed. And this really started me on my journey.
Hmm. And you were informed through the books that you were reading. Did you consult with them as well, or did you just start digging into people's, unaware parts of their brain that might have been able to reveal things?
Well, you know, I'm sure, Veronica, that somehow when you start investigating something, things start to come into your awareness in different ways.
That's for sure, isn't it?
It is absolutely true. It's almost like you focus with an intent and other things happen. Within a few weeks, I had another lady who suggested it appeared might be having these experiences. I was part of something called the Australasian Society for Psychical Research, and I was introduced to a social worker that was having experiences as well, and she thought she was going crazy until she saw three beings in her lounge room, thought, this is it, I've definitely lost the plot, until a friend of hers knocked on the door, came through, and said to her, do you realize you've got three strange beings in your lounge room? She said, oh, you can see them too? And she said, yes, I can. So this was like a big journey for her. We connected and started the first Perth abductee support group.
Oh,
and
my.
The first time people came, there were 12 individuals in that first short time we advertised. And that really hit me really between the eyes, that if there's 12 that are prepared to own to this, how many more are out there having encounters? And I also then got in touch with Dr. Max Institute, the Center for Extraordinary Experience Research, and another organization which helps me in terms of with professionals that are also working in this field. So from that, then, I really found that through doing interviews and radio interviews, for example, TV interviews, and I was asked by magazines to do different things, that the word got out that there was someone that dealt with this. And from that, it's really, you know, the rest is history, really.
Mm-hmm. Has it been very exciting for you?
Actually, it was very confronting, because when you've got a certain professional persona, which is, you know, the professional counselor that's worked in, you know, for various organizations in Perth at the time. I now live in Queensland, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, am I going to lose some of my professional cred once some of my friends that, you know, in the psychology marries into UFOs and aliens? But actually, what I did find was when I finally said, well, I can't step away from this. There's nowhere for these people to go, that many of them are afraid to go to the traditional support, such as psychologists or psychiatrists, because they're fearful of how they're going to be perceived.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, well, am I going to honor this? Because I now know it, as far as I'm concerned, it's real. This means that you're going to have to just step out the box too, Mary. And it was like...
Were you scared?
I think all of us, when we're moving into a way of life that we know is a crossroads, which is going to take us down what I consider a very, very complex rabbit hole, you find that, for me, the whole shift in paradigms was I had to really let go of everything I ever knew and believed and basically start again, which is what my clients have to do.
So that was about 1982 or 84 or something?
I've been exploring a lot of alternate knowledge, if you like, right since I was a young girl. My mother was very open-minded, and so I was interested in ghosts and spirits and all of that. I was very comfortable with the reality of that. I read books on out-of-body experiences. I did regressions where people went into past lives.
Wonderful.
So, you know, I was getting the evidence through my clients and working with them that there was a real tangible reality to all of this, and it was very much part of the soul journey. So I was going down that track anyway. This was an aspect that I hadn't really explored. I mean, I've never dismissed, you know, I think it's absolutely illogical to think that in a universe of billions or trillions of stars that we're the only intelligent life. I just think that's totally ludicrous to even think that we can possibly be the only intelligent life. So for me, that wasn't out of order at all, but I hadn't understood that the evidence that we've been visited for millennia was actually there in front of you when you start looking. And, of course, anthropologically, all the anomalies, the strange skulls that have been found, the anomalies in our DNA, for example, is particularly interesting to me as a, you know, being in the medical, nursing medical science, that was my background. So where's the evidence? The evidence is actually in our DNA.
Well, tell me this. Can you see it in the DNA? Can people study it scientifically and actually see it there?
Yep. Absolutely, and there has been there's one particular bit of information that if people want to understand that Lloyd Pye with the Star Child skull, this is a skull that's 900 years old that was found with a human skeleton in a cave in Mexico. The DNA testing has taken Lloyd a long time because it's been expensive over the last 10 years. But only recently, if you want to go on to the Star Child Project, mm-hmm. you will find that what's been discovered is the mitochondrial DNA, which is the mother's side of the DNA, is actually not human. There are enormous number of differences only actually in that particular skull itself. There are other elongated skulls that have been found in Peru, which initially they thought were due to binding, mm-hmm. but the mother's binding the skull to make it that strange shape, but they ended up finding fetuses with the same shaped skulls.
Well, didn't they bind them in Egypt to create the Nefertiti?
Well, that's what they're trying to say, but mm-hmm. now there seems to be evidence that the only reason they were binding them was previously the gods that had visited them. And you remember a lot of the pharaohs said they were sons of gods.
Right.
That had those particular shaped skulls. And that's why you've got the strange headdresses. So it's actually the reverse of what we think, that it was because, you know, they just bound them because they found that either attractive or whatever. But they were emulating the gods that had interbred with humans.
Assyrians and so on, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I had a little 8-year-old tell me only a few weeks ago, the whole family's having encounters, and he said it's the cat beings that built the pyramids. And
he
that's what this 8-year-old told me.
Wow.
I had a 5-year-old say when his mother tried to tell him about how the pyramids were built, and he got very angry with her and said, no, it wasn't hundreds of slaves, Mum. He said, I know, because I was there. He said they changed the density structure of objects large and small, and they levitated those stones into place.
Wow.
And there was a giant crystal placed on the top which communicated with other worlds. And there's information in the Sphinx, but they haven't found it yet.
Isn't it wonderful that the children, and the children know that, because that's just coming through him, right? I mean, that's
exactly right.
His awakening.
Many of them. That's right. Well, some of it's also not only the downloading, which 1 8-year-old called knowledge bombs in her head, mm-hmm. but they also go up on the spacecraft. And this little 8-year-old that I'm working with at the moment, a lovely young boy, says to me that he goes up with a couple of his school friends. He talks about learning complex mathematics in a group of other humans and hybrids and other beings. And he talks about manipulating the mathematics almost in a holographic way on the craft.
Hmm.
He talks about going up on the craft, having a medical exam once a year with his school friends. There are particular school friends he goes with, he remembers. There are some that he says that he doesn't see there. And he actually says that he doesn't come from here.
Okay. So tell me this, when you're talking about going up on the craft, is that a Zeta craft or is it all different or what?
What I think we have to be careful of is that from my information and research, there could be at least about 160 different species of grey, for example.
Okay.
There are many species of the reptilians, too. I mean, one source told me that two types of reptilian are benevolent. One is a rogue group. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of information I get. So when somebody says a grey is this or a reptilian is that, it's only from their limited experience, for example, and that doesn't necessarily cover the broad spectrum of these particular species.
It's like saying an Australian or a Canadian,
yes,
or American.
Exactly. Absolutely. You know, you get one interaction with, say, you know, a Japanese person, and you can't say, well, that's what Japanese are all like.
Right.
And this is exactly the same thing. And on the craft, when someone's on there, they may see, for example, several greys, they may see blue beings, they may see humanoids, and maybe insect-like ones called the manta.
Mm-hmm.
And they may all be working together on a particular craft with all different jobs.
So they all work together, eh? They're not all
Yeah, in a cooperative, in the sense that each has certain skills that they are bringing to working with the human that may come on the craft.
So why are they taking the humans to the craft? You know that a lot of people want to know that.
Oh, look, there's a multi program or agenda, if you like. Some of it is to monitor our health and the fact that we are living in a world where we use, you know, all sorts of things that are damaging to our health, such as, you know, eating preservatives and and all these kinds of things, the pollutants that are on the planet, the radioactivity, etc. Mm-hmm. So one of them, as this little boy said, he goes once a year to have a medical exam. Mm. They take DNA, and mm-hmm. they are checking that. They also are looking at altering the DNA, and they are doing this, I think, for a number of reasons. Almost like you're looking for certain qualities that you want human beings to have that upgrade or accelerate their awareness.
Well, Mary, are these our ancestors? Is that why they want to do that with us?
You've hit it on the head. In mythology, in ancient texts, they talk about the gods, not one god, but the gods. Mm-hmm. In Mexico, one of their gods was Quetzalcoatl, which was actually a feathered serpent. Mm-hmm. And they venerated Quetzalcoatl. He was the interstellar messenger. He taught them how to grow things, what things were beneficial to them, how to accelerated their civilizations. But he was a reptilian.
Hmm.
You know, we have evidence of reptilians as gods in Iran and Iraq, for example. We have evidence of the gods, for the Greek gods, for example, which were humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
Right across the board, I mean, in Australia, it's the Wangina, which are the, you know, the sky beings that even now I've got Aboriginal drawings which show the Wangina coming down and teaching the Aborigines where to find water. How to heal, and using crystals for healing, like amethyst, for example.
Hmm.
All of these the Aborigines know about with the Wangina, and they say they come from the Seven Sisters. So they have understandings of what part of the universe a lot of these gods, or we would call them extraterrestrials, came from.
Hmm.
So it's yes, of course, and the understanding is they've always mixed their DNA with ours, and that's, you know, there are many tribes that know that they are a mix of both,
mm-hmm.
and that's why they venerate the star visitors, because they're ancestors.
Okay, so one of the things, that jumping back to the star children, so we can kind of put it in a body, I guess, you know, you have a little bit in this article about how a little child said to his mom what the percentage of E.T. was in each of the people that was walking by them on a street. Do you remember that story?
Yes, absolutely. It was a 10-year-old, and it blew the mother away that her son literally, quite casually, just walked down the street and pointed out to her the percentage of extraterrestrial genes in each human he passed, quite casually, like he could just sense it. And this is what's interesting about a lot of the star children, is they are so aware of their star origins. This little 8-year-old that I've been talking about says sometimes when he's looking at the school kids, he will see their human side, and then he will get a glimpse of their ET side, and there will be a different form there that is not human. And I said to him, what do you feel like when you see that? He said, he says, it's a bit strange, he said, a bit scary.
Mm-hmm.
So he's aware that there's another aspect to them that isn't as human as that other, because they can often see and perceive energy fields. This little boy says that he understands and communicates with animals.
Mm-hmm.
He sees energy fields around plants, humans, and animals. And he, you know, this is a sense that I think, you know, we're all opening up to, is our multidimensional side, where we will perceive and understand things from that. Some would say, you know, psychic level. I would say it's just high sensibilities. It's our actually ability as humans ultimately to become multidimensional.
So do you think that our programmed, you know, if we have ancestors that, and we were their experimental product, did they build in the DNA or the genetic programming that would limit our lifespan and limit our health? And is that what's being undone, or is that just a slice of beings through time that are having it undone?
I think it's all a bit of all of that, Veronica. From my understanding, we only use 5% of our DNA that's active.
Okay.
The rest is being considered junk litter.
we know intuitively better than that, don't we?
Well, that's a load of, excuse my French, crap. I mean, the bottom line is, and I've actually been very fortunate to connect with a molecular biologist in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
who absolutely understands the shifts and the changes that are going on. And he actually has said something really profound, which follows on from one of my ex-clients, Tracy Taylor, who actually said basically the conscious awareness of these new children can override dominant conditioning and programming that occurs from birth, and that they have superior analytical and mental capabilities.
But wait a minute, does now, that mean that their superior capabilities can unravel the limitations in the DNA? Is that what that means?
Well, basically, it means they have access because of the fact they can't be conditioned in the way the previous models can.
Mm.
Almost like they've been assisted to be less limited. And I'm going to throw something into the mix here that is coming from the molecular biologist, if you like, and his name's
okay.
William Brown.
Okay.
And he says this: I believe that genetic modification is occurring right now in utero and is actually producing a new human, one with far greater access to information contained and access through the human DNA. The hybrids are altogether a new species of human. And he said, and this is the bit that's going to throw the cat amongst the pigeons with some people, emergence of the new human is shown by the exponential increase in autistic, ADD, and indigo children.
Oh, wonderful.
They have new genetic architecture that allows them to see the world in a multidimensional fashion.
My, my.
And this is a molecular biologist. He said, and also the intrinsic understanding of certain knowledge and information goes down to biomolecular level, where sentient activity of the brain actually takes place in the atomic structure of DNA molecules. It's transgenerational information.
Transgenerational, meaning goes from the mum to the child?
And it's encoded in the atomic structure of the DNA molecule, the bits that we call junk DNA, if you like.
Well, tell me this. There was a big thing that I read. I don't mean to interrupt you. Well, maybe I did. I get excited, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a Dr. Boylan, just for the name, for a reference, and he had a lot of statistics on the number. Oh, no, what is it? He did it with dowsing, I believe, the percentage of ET material in various age groups. Did you read that list?
Yes.
And is that, let me see. I guess what I'm trying to figure out, is it really on the upswing? Is it on the increase? Are we looking at a huge, huge quantum shift in people, in humans?
I believe so. I believe that we are on, we are at a very crucial point in our evolution,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's more on the lines of the 100th monkey, you know, when there's a certain percentage of humans that waken, as this little 9-year-old girl from Northern Europe said, I'm here to help my family wake up. She said, everybody is sleeping, is how she puts it.
Okay.
And so she said that this is now going to be part of it. All the children that have been coming in recent years are far more awakened, and because of that, they're bringing in the new frequencies, the new awareness. And from that, we ultimately will, almost like osmosis, it will act with, you know, as we're exposed to it, and depending on how awake and how aware and how receptive we are. I suspect that it will ultimately be like the 100th monkey, that everybody will get this knowing. It will actually happen at some point. And it may be what, you know, we're talking about in terms of the 2012. I believe it's all about a shift in consciousness, that we are literally going to get to a point where we realize our true abilities.
But you're saying also that it's a shift in the DNA and a shift in the genetic coding as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what William Brown's talking about, is that we... certain things need to happen within our DNA
mm-hmm.
to be, and as they're altered, will allow us to access more information. And the frequencies that are coming to the planet at the moment, you know, in terms of the electromagnetic frequencies from the sun, which is can also affect our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
We are being triggered by such things as crop circles, which are touching us from a very, very ancient level in terms of the catalyst that they produce.
Now, who's making those, Mary?
Well, there's certainly some that are made by humans, and I know that there is, and that's been deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a whole new ball game.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe the majority of them are certainly not made by humans. I have enough evidence from, you know, speaking and with crop circle researchers that understand that the changes, the bio, the biology and nature of the changes, the fact that people have seen the strange lights and within seconds there's been a crop circle there, for example, that there's no agency on this planet that can do things like that.
No.
These kinds of things for me are overwhelmingly convincing because once you start to go into the science behind what they found, there are certain things that happen through microwaves that these plants experience when this kind of microwave frequency creates the crop circle. They are very much tied into consciousness. The other things that are assisting consciousness, not only with the children who have these downloads of information that are that also assisting them to understand the greater reality, with all of that is the languages many of them start to find themselves speaking, the strange scripts that they write. All of these are frequencies. A lot of them of the star kids are bringing it through intuitive music, which again is frequency. But it, you say, well, where's the science there? And one of the interesting things that I've tried to do is look for the science to back up what my clients have been telling me and what they've got to know. Mm-hmm. Some of the recent research in Russia to do with the DNA molecule is that they found that DNA can be altered and changed by human language.
Aha,
it only has to be the
wow.
right human language. Mm-hmm. Now, they're saying literally that you wouldn't need to splice dysfunctional genes. You would just need to know the right language, which is, again, a frequency, to actually alter and change that DNA, which also explains a little bit to do with hypnosis, if you think about it, because we know that suggestion, again, obviously in a certain positive way, can actually change the mindset, but it's also apparently can actually change the very arrangement of DNA itself.
So well, it's interesting. I just want to jump back to crop circles just for 1 minute. Well, I read something, and it was explaining that the crop circles themselves are very, very intricate messages of unfoldment for us, are they not?
Yes.
And that they actually have energy particles that are absolutely teeny, teeny. I don't remember what they're called. That you couldn't have put in there as a human being because we just don't know how to do that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But they are messages, right? And they are evocative messages.
Yes, I think that on a very deep level, those are messages that are affecting us at that very, very deep level, even if we're not aware of it, because people have gone into the crop circles and had healings, for example.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Have had shifts in awareness and shifts in consciousness. I've met some of these people. One of them was Jana Ozabard, a crop circle researcher from the Netherlands, who's a good friend of mine, and she found she had almost like an epiphany when she first walked into a crop circle, and it changed her life just simply by walking in there. So we know there's powerful frequencies in crop circles.
Well, you're saying that language can change DNA, and I'm thinking the crop circles are a gargantuan effect of that nature, are they not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
why are they hitting the UK? They should be here, don't you think?
Well, they're all over the world, and people don't realize that. You've got a real concentration in the UK, and that may be due to some harmonics or energy lines that where they are exactly, but at least 150 have been seen in Australia, for example.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they are all over the world, but I suspect that a lot of the time, I mean, I've heard that farmers here, when they've seen them, they don't want to know about it. They've seen strange lights and they feel uncomfortable, and being good Aussie blokes, they're not going to talk about something as strange and weird and as wonderful as a crop circle in their in their fields, for example.
Oh, darn. So let's go back to the children, but I just wanted to make that point about language coming in different forms right now, too.
Absolutely. It's on every level that I think that we're being assisted to evolve, and in a lot of subtle levels as well. The thing that's been quite amazing for me in the last few years, how many people that have been living very conventional lives over the last few years have almost been kick-started into looking at their lives and experiences that they dismissed or denied for years and years and years. Some people are in their 60s and 70s that are saying, you know, I've had this all my life and I haven't wanted to go there, but now I feel like I've got to understand it, I've got to know. And this is the same thing that I'm getting day in, day out now. It's almost like there's been a huge acceleration of people not being allowed to deny their experiences anymore.
So what happens, how do you work with them, and can they be open to absolutely receive the information they've stifled for so long?
Well, first of all, it's just giving them a map, a road map, and my questionnaire usually is very helpful there because it brings up things that they may not have connected in terms of their encounters or their contacts. So that gives them a bit of a road map. They realize other people, it's not just them. They're not alone, that they're not the weird, the only weird and wonderful person on the planet. In fact, there's millions of billions of people out there, I reckon, that are actually experiencing this and still feel it's just them.
So that, but your questionnaire can help them jump shift so they can be a part of the unfoldment, can it?
Well, it actually gives them a bit of a roadmap to their own story. I mean, I would like a dollar for every time they've got back to me and said, were you sitting on my shoulder through my life? How did you know this?
Oh.
And being very emotional about it because they can't believe someone can actually isolate all the things that have gone on through a simple questionnaire and basically highlight so many things that are relevant to them. It is quite an emotional thing for some people, really emotional.
Is it on your website?
Because they just think it's always been them.
Mm-hmm. I bet, eh?
You know, so that's the first thing. Then it's, oh, my God, so this is real then. And, well, are you ready to take on board this is real? And there's a big realization event where, but if it's real, then I have to look at everything in my life, and it's not going to make any sense the way that I've understood it before. No, it isn't. So are you ready now to take that step into finding out again the truth of your reality and the truth of the fact that you are interacting with potentially a number of these star beings? And, you know, from that, making a new paradigm. And that is something, a process that, you know, in my book, Awakening, I take people through that process from the fear, am I crazy, to what do I do to understand this more, you know, what about implants? What about the missing pregnancies? What about that my children are having experience? How do I manage that? How do I manage these high sensibilities where I find I can tune into future events? I find I can see energies. I'm seeing spirits, or I'm seeing, you know, these strange beings. How do I manage that? How do I deal with that? So what I did was put together, if you like, a process that so many of my clients went through with the questions that they asked me, and so it gives people a manual, if you like, to say, oh, this is the bit that I'm at the moment. Okay, I'm still trying to work out, you know, where do I take this in terms of my shift in paradigm and my new awareness. Because whether we like it or not, this is a transformational process, almost like a modern-day shamanic experience. You know, what people, I try and say to the more spiritually aware of those that are coming through with this is, you know, this is, I participated in a thesis which was comparisons between shamanism and abductions. And in that,
that sounds interesting.
It was done at Ida Cowan University in Perth. Simon Harvey Wilson was a researcher, and a CERN participated with a number of clients, and his conclusions were very clear that the comparisons between shamanism and abduction in terms of higher awareness, healing, awareness of other realms, et cetera, were identical. So in a way, I believe these intelligences are, if you like, kicking us through the fear place into becoming multidimensional in the same way a shaman has to face his demons and his fears before he can operate, if you like, in a multidimensional world.
So are you saying that we're actually entering, we're in a portal for multidimensionality?
Yes. Okay. I believe this is what the junk DNA is about. I believe that now we're being given the software for the new hard drive, because up to now we've been in a very limited world, which I think obviously has been deliberate in a way, while we're still very primitive and barbaric. We couldn't be allowed to understand the greater reality because of our motivation and our spirituality wasn't at a level where we could operate in that kind of, with that those abilities, if you like. Whereas now I think that because we're going to very soon be, and I think we probably already are, a spacefaring nation, and to become part of, if you like, the galactic community, we're going to have to grow up pretty fast. And what they're doing, I think, is giving us a real kickstart, saying, well, you can't enter our planetary world until you grow up, mature, and stop being so primitive. And taking responsibility for what you're doing actually affects the whole of us in the cosmic community.
Like with nuclear war, nuclear power, yes, and all that
exactly.
kind of
That's
thing.
That's why they're shutting a lot of those down. Mm-hmm. And evidence of them actually shutting down nuclear warheads is I've met some of the military people that have been on camps, military camps and Air Force bases where they've had the nukes and they've seen and experienced UFOs on the perimeter. Literally, they've noticed that the nukes were actually deprogrammed. And one of them that talks about this is Robert Salas, and he wrote the book Faded Giant, and he was on a military base in the 60s where that happened, and he was told he was never allowed to talk about it, but now he does, mm-hmm. very openly. The same thing happened in Suffolk in England in the 80s, and the Rendlesham Forest incident, where they had two U.S. Air Force bases that were craft seen in Rendlesham Forest. They noticed afterwards that the nukes had been basically deprogrammed.
Wow. And Larry King Live
had like it.
And Larry King Live showed a missile being launched, I think it was 2 years ago or something, and it was intercepted in the sky as
yes.
well. And
well,
it was
they are making
show.
It very clear that
Good.
We can't operate from that kind of basis, that nuclear warheads and nuclear, the way that we're using atomic power is a no-no, because they're actually saying quite bluntly that this not just affects our planet, and we don't know what we're doing to our planet, but it also affects the multidimensional nature of the dimensions and where they are. So we mm-hmm. don't understand yet the nature of the true nature of reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, we're trying. So let's go back
yeah.
to the Star Kids, because I think my question is about this, which is throughout recorded history or anything we've learned about history, it seems like right back at the beginning of civilization, we've had influence from extraterrestrial cultures, have we not? But right now, there's an upswing, is there not?
Absolutely. I think that my belief is that all the religions initially were instigated with these star beings in different forms, bringing down certain moral codes mm-hmm. to help us grow up as a species into more awareness of, you know, how to treat one another, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not saying this to upset anyone, mm-hmm. but my sense is when you see medieval paintings, as I've done, and they're on the internet for anyone who wants to look, where you see a religious painting such as the Baptism of Christ by Art de Gelder, and in the top, the rays coming down are from what clearly looks like a saucer-shaped craft. You have to say, what is a saucer-shaped craft doing in a religious picture in medieval times? There are many religious pictures with Madonna where you're seeing craft in the sky, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe they're attached to our religious beliefs. And if you look, there are lots of corresponding things in terms of Buddha and all these other different belief systems. I think that, you know, we are, if you like, our ancestors saying, you know, we've really got to get these children of ours into line. How can we do it in a way that will assist them to start, you know, behaving in a more spiritual and a balanced and harmonious way? Mm-hmm. And one way is to bring in new belief system that you know that the children can get with boundaries mm-hmm. that say, you know, this is not okay and this is okay.
Yeah, and you won't get away with this, and you won't
and
get
you
away
won't
with
get
that.
Away with this. Yeah.
This is very exciting, and I want to go back to the children again, because we keep talking about the presence of ET beings, and children, some children can really handle them. And I know from reading some of your material that there's a very loving, loving rapport between some of these beings and some of the people that they talk to. I wondered if you could talk a bit about that.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of the star children will tell me that they know they're not from here. And these are adults as well, saying, I've never felt like I've belonged. Mm-hmm. Even my own family doesn't feel, I don't feel so connected to them. And I don't know why I don't, but I feel like I've been adopted because I feel so different. I've never understood other humans. They seem very primitive. They seem very, very barbaric. And my family, put me here for, I've got a job to do.
Mm-hmm.
This little boy, for example, that I've mentioned, the little eight-year-old, told me his real family is a manta being, which is, in fact, the insect-like being.
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's my family.
Oh, wow.
And he said, and the lion beings too support and protect me, because that's another one he sees. And he said, I've come here to help the animals and the people. I've come to help them understand that animals are important and that we've got to take care of them, because, you know, we don't understand how much we can damage and hurt them, and we shouldn't be doing this anymore. But the very real clear message is that the family, the real family, is not human. That, in fact, the genetic family is out there, and they feel absolutely connected to that. Now, he's not the only one that feels like the manta beings, which are insect-like looking, and you think, well, I wouldn't want to belong to one of them because they look too strange, weird, and wonderful. But I've got a gentleman who I've just done the foreword for, his book, 51 Years of Encounters with Extraterrestrials, and he, Simon Parks, has already stated that his real mother, and he was told his real mother when he was a small boy, was a manta. Exactly the same as this little eight-year-old. Said exactly the same things about their energy, having a purple energy, that they are very wise and very ancient, and they are a part of those species assisting us at the moment to evolve in the way that we, you know, they want us to.
Is this a case of they have a certain kind of frequency screening so that we can't see them unless they want us to, for
yeah,
starters?
I mean, they absolutely. I mean, the screens, what I call the, you know, the fear-based screens, is, you know, when people are frightened of clowns or Santa Claus or owls with big eyes as a child, that's often a screen for a gray. What they're doing basically is working with our own, if you like, mindset. And the theory is, I think, that if it's Santa Claus or if it's a clown, the child won't be frightened, but on some level the child senses it's not really a clown, it's not really Santa Claus. And that will be, you know, the screen for seeing the true nature until they're ready to see the true nature of the being. Sometimes people will see them, you know, dressed in a cloak, for example. They won't show their face because they know the person isn't ready to see it's not human.
And so how does a person break in? If somebody's listening to this show right now, I hope, and they have an awareness, how do they turn and look? How do they alter themselves so they aren't afraid? How do they make communication, Mary?
Well, the first thing is to be informed, to understand that you're not strange, weird, and wonderful, and that you're not crazy, and there's millions of people out there having the same experience, this communication with many different intelligences. That's the first thing, and it's real. Go on to any of the whistleblower sites and realize that we have been lied to consistently for the last 60, 70, 80 years by certain covert groups that don't want you to know this is real and have sent out a lot of fear and disinformation so that we're lied to. So most of the public still doesn't know this is a reality. So get a real handle on the fact that, yes, this is real. Then look at what's happened in your life where you've had major changes. And often after encounters, when there's been missing time or you've woken up with marks on your body, often you'll also find you have a change in mindset. You will feel different. You may feel very tired the next morning. You may feel very lethargic. But usually there's something that's happened to do with your encounter on the craft. And anything like medical exams can happen. There are healing that's done on the craft. There's a book called 100 Documented Healings of UFO Interactions by Preston Dennett. Many of my clients have had healing procedures on the craft, which when they go into it in hypnosis, they thought something horrible had happened because they expected something horrible to have happened. But when they go on the craft and they see what's actually gone on, they often discover a certain healing procedure has been done, which has been very hard for them to accept because they expected to find something really horrible.
But that's under hypnosis that they discovered that.
That's when hypnosis is really useful, because if they've got a fear of something, and often our fear is of the unknown, it's because we don't know what's happened creates the fear. It's not necessarily of what really did happen.
Well, also the Hollywood builds up that kind of thing as well, yes.
It's absolutely right. Hollywood's really good at disseminating fear. And this is also, and I don't want to go into the conspiratorial side any more than this, is the fact that there's a program to continue that fear, because while you're in fear, you don't explore your own experiences and you don't want to acknowledge that this is a reality. And the public continues then that paranoia, which suits the ones that want to keep this from you.
Are these new kids, are they afraid, or do they tend to be more aware so they're not afraid or they don't buy it?
Well, I'll quote, this is a 9-year-old that said there's at least five like her in her school. but she says they have to be very careful because there is a dark side of humanity that wants to shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
So the, you know, she in fact is very, she won't let me say her name and she won't even let me say her country because she realizes that it can put her in some kind of danger. Now, this is a 9-year-old girl.
And she realizes that fully at 9 years old.
Exactly, which is incredible mm-hmm. that she has that awareness.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really exciting. So what about people who, Mary, I'm 100 years old. No, I'm 68, actually. And I keep thinking I'm one of those star people, star children. Is that possible?
Yes.
And are
Absolutely.
There tons of us that are older?
Yes.
And can we take advantage of that these days? Can we sort of emerge that way?
Oh, look, I think that, this 9-year-old reckons that the star kids have been coming in through right from the beginning of time. 50% of humans being born are star kids right from the beginning of time.
50%.
The way she puts it. But she said through programming and, you know, this the way that we educate and program our children, literally, she said, programs out the light. Mm-hmm. So that ultimately only a certain percentage retain that light when they're adults. She says nowadays, she said from that 50%, only about 15% will retain the integrity of their light through our educational systems and the way our consensus reality at the moment. So, yes, absolutely. I think these star kids certainly have been there, but what's happening now is there more and more of them are harder to program because we're getting, as William Brown is saying, with these what we call so-called dysfunctions,
mm-hmm.
which is the ADHD, the autism, and Asperger's is one I'm adding to that,
mm-hmm.
I think these are new programs. And the reason it's just that we don't understand what their abilities are. The ADHD, for example, there's a gentleman called Neil Gold in Hong Kong who's written the book Close Encounters of the ADHD Kind.
Mm.
And he said he's always seen reality differently. And I suspect they've created programs that are not so easily programmed by our third dimensional consensus reality, which frees them up to be more open to their light. Is the way that I would comment on the little 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and the fact that these are all accelerating, we're getting a preponderance more of these types of children, I suspect is no accident. And I may be wrong, but my hypothesis is that they've chosen programs where the children can't be programmed into the socializing and the limitedness of the third dimensional world, which makes it hard for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are seeing it as a dysfunction. But I've had autistic children see beings. I've Asperger's, the same thing. They seem to have more of an understanding of the multidimensional nature of reality and able to access it more easily than we do as a more standard human.
But they may actually help the older people adjust to a more multidimensional existence.
Absolutely. This is what the little girl said to me, is we are the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
We are here, but we need our parents to listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
She said they've got to learn to listen. She said everybody is sleeping, and I'm here to wake my family up. And this is the very common theme of a lot of the younger star kids. I'm here to help people wake up.
Well, how do you see it working around the world? Do you see that we are waking up around the world?
Without question.
Mm-hmm.
I think this has been going on for a number of years, where different frequencies coming in from the crop circles, from the sun is sending out certain frequencies that are part of this as well. I think that the information coming in through downloads, that one little girl called knowledge bombs in her head,
mm-hmm.
All of this is a part of the collective of human consciousness, and ultimately it cannot help that we will, you know, it is going to ultimately change human consciousness. It's inevitable. It's, you know, I look at some really simple things when I illustrate this. If you'd said to me 35 years ago as a nurse that GPs would, you get these needles and you stick them in people and they're going to make, you know, they're going to make huge changes in their health, such as, you know, acupuncture, ultimately that GPs would be doing that in 30 years' time, as part of their GP practice, I would have laughed at you because
mm-hmm.
then my nursing couldn't imagine someone using needles and sticking them in different parts. My daughter does acupuncture. She's a naturopath.
Mm.
You know, and I don't have any question about the fact that this is effective and it works, even though it's not fully understood. who would believe that moving things around in a room can change the chi, the energy? Mm-hmm. I would have laughed at you 30 mm-hmm. years ago if you told me that corporations would pay thousands of dollars for someone to come in and do feng shui on their building, for example. Mm-hmm. Look at how we've shifted into accepting. Look at the numbers that now access natural medicine and are turning away from traditional mindsets. Look at what William Brown is saying. He's mentioning indigos. He's mentioning the new human. He's a molecular biologist mm-hmm. of the new ones coming in.
Tell me a little bit about indigo before we move on to the next, because don't want to miss anything, Mary.
The indigo are one of, it seems to me, they're talking about the crystal children and what mm-hmm. have you. I think there are different programs for different agendas, if you like.
Okay.
So you need a different type of human for different things that you're wanting to orchestrate in this awakening. Like they've got different roles to play.
And the indigos are disruptive, right?
Yeah, well, they're saying, I'm not going to be programmed.
Mm-hmm.
Get stuffed. I don't believe what you're telling me is right. It doesn't feel right. And they are actually shaking us up.
Mm-hmm.
They're challenging us. They're
mm-hmm.
saying, I don't want this. I don't want to be socialized in that way. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And this is needing to happen. We need the challengers. We need the rebels to come in and shake us up, because we've fallen into this very sick, limited reality that stops us believing in who we can be.
Mm-hmm.
This 9-year-old little girl, I'll call her Kathy for giving her a name, said to me, human beings have no conception of their true potential.
Mm-hmm.
They have no conception of what we are capable of or what they are capable of. It is unimaginable, she told me. Absolutely.
And that's like being multidimensional, being able to move through time and space, being able to bend.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Time.
Mm-hmm. Teleport. There are children in China called China Super Psychics that actually can change the very nature of DNA in a Petri dish with their mind.
Mm-hmm.
They can open flower buds with their mind.
Mm-hmm.
These are children. There are children in Mexico that can read and see with various parts of their body. I've actually seen a 16-year-old girl read the newspaper through her feet.
Hmm.
Wearing shoes.
Like Edgar Casey used to sleep on his books, remember?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it really is whatever you can imagine is what this little girl was saying is possible and more. Even what you can't imagine is possible.
Well, what do you think is going to happen on the planet then? We have to end this soon, and I don't want to even let you go. Good grief. What's going to happen on the planet? Do you think we're going to shift and be able to do that kind of thing? Or is it for all of us,
Yes, I certainly believe all of us that have incarnated now are meant to be part of this huge shift in human consciousness. And there are a lot of those that really believe this as well. David Wilcox is one of them.
Yes,
he mentions this convergence of timelines where, there is going to be this huge shift. And this is what those covert agencies that have hidden this from us are terrified of.
Mm-hmm.
Because already a lot of the kids are telepathic. They know what you're thinking. One 13-year-old girl said to me, the teacher is saying one thing, but she's thinking something else.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's thinking isn't very nice.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to access the truth.
Yeah.
What do you do when you live in a world of secrets, mm-hmm. when the secrets are no longer secrets?
Well, that's happening anyway in the news these days.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? Well,
isn't
I want
it part of the energy of it.
I know, it's wonderful. I want to say this also. Didn't you, what I picked up from some of the work that you've written and some other places was that we have a very, very loving, loving group of extraterrestrial supporters out there, that there's tremendous love for us, even though we can be pretty obnoxious and egregious about our behavior. Is that right? Would you agree with
absolutely.
That?
There are many different species that have been assisting and helping us because we're their kids. We're their children.
Mm.
We are, part of what they do in other universes. This is what this little boy said. He's been on through technology into other universes, and they do this in other galaxies, other universes. Everywhere is helping the indigenous species, and through upgrading and assisting them to grow and change and evolve. This is happening everywhere through the cosmos.
Oh, how
exciting. And
we're
one of many.
Well, so, and tell us a little teeny bit about the hybrid children.
Well, the hybrid ones are usually being there's, again, looking at other planets that need different types of humanoid containers, for want of a better word, because we're not our humanoid container anyway. Our soul or our consciousness moves in and out of that at night as we astral travel and we go to other places, for example. So in a sense, they are creating other humanoid containers to suit other worlds. And some of them are, you know, specifically for being on spacecraft because mm-hmm. it's a different gravity, it's a different environment, so they need different types of containers.
You need a different vehicle. What,
mm-hmm. Yeah, a different vehicle. I'm going to confront some viewers by telling, sorry, listeners, by saying that some of the people that I've met that go up on the craft talk about going into another container on the craft and then going back into their human container. One lady said, I'm now in a gray body and I'm a scientist. And she said, this is the body I use when I'm on the craft. So I said to her, where's your human body? And she said, oh, it's over there, almost like it was hanging on a hook. And I said, so how do you get back to your human container so you can come back to Earth? And she described a ball of light, an orb of light, that goes back into the, and reanimates a human form so that she can operate down on planet Earth because it's a different density. In the same way we'd go, you know, if we were going underwater, we would put on a suit to sustain the extra pressures that we would find at the bottom of the ocean. Just like that. That's how they see biological containers.
Oh, wow.
We are not our biological container. And this little boy has said the same thing. He evaporates into this other form, is how he describes it. He's eight. And then he comes back into his human form some of the time, not always, but some of the time when he's on the spacecraft.
He's a little flexible. Well, Mary, you have to give everybody your information because we're out of time, but we're certainly not out of information, so maybe you'll share with us again.
Absolutely. It will be a pleasure, Veronica.
All right. And how can people get hold of you? I want you to mention your book, which is called, I believe, Awakenings?
That's correct. How Extraterrestrial Contact Can Transform Your Life. Accessible from myself, and I can give you the connections. You can also go on to some of the Amazon, for example, and what have you as well. But also, if you go to my website, my email is there if you feel like you need to email me. And a lot of information is on my website, which is acern.com.au.
And that's A-C-E-R-N, right?
Yes, the Australian Close Encounter Resource Network.
CERN.com,
E-A-U. Or Google Mary Rodwell and it will come up as well.
Wonderful.
Lots of interviews that I've done, even a regression I did a few weeks ago, is now available if people want to see how I work in hypnosis.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'd love to have a shot at it. Maybe you'll hear from me that way.
That would be wonderful.
Thank you for being our paradigm shifter tonight. And this is Veronica Entwistle saying goodnight to Mary Rodwell in hopes that she'll come back again soon. And I want to say to you all, thank you so much for listening. I hope you've broadened your perspective on becoming a multidimensional human being. And thanks to Mary Rodwell for her work. If you'd like to email me for any more information, it's veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. Good night, everyone.